FM Rewind, File 88.1.
Earlier on, while on the conversation about smoking, especially products that have nicotine, we also learned that smoking doesn't just harm the lungs and the heart. It's linked to cervical cancer. And that's the conversation that we are about to get into now. Cervical cancer. And perhaps you're asking yourself, all right, cervical cancer, what is it all about, and what exactly leads to cervical cancer? Well, it's a very important, I must say, medical condition to be informed about, and despite being largely preventable, cervical cancer remains a major public health crisis. In South Africa, the numbers are alarming. Each and every year, more than 10,000 women are diagnosed, and around 5,000 lose their lives to the disease. So from the 10,000, 50 to 60% of women diagnosed each and every year don't make it. They succumb to this cervical cancer medical condition. What makes this even more heartbreaking is that it often affects our younger women, those between the ages of 15 and 44 years of age. And it mostly have an impact on black South African women who can't even afford a medical aid. That's sad, because as soon as they find out that they have cervical cancer, it's difficult for them to get treatment that making them, very difficult to fight the condition. And this crisis is driven by several factors: late diagnosis, low screening uptake, gaps in our health system, and the country's high HIV prevalence, which does increase the risk of cervical cancer by sixfold. On the line, we are joined by Dr. Gwena Homu, who is a gynecologist, specializing in such medical conditions. He's going to break down everything that we need to know regarding cervical cancer, from early detection of HPV vaccination to the importance of regular pap smear. He is joining us on the line. Good evening. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good evening, and good evening to your listeners. Thank you for inviting me to your show.
From a medical perspective, what exactly is cervical cancer?
So, just like any other cancer, really, it's an abnormal growth or multiplication of cells that becomes tumorous or cancerous, and they outgrow the normal cells in that particular tissue. So in this case, the abnormal cells outgrow the normal cells in the cervix. They have the potential to invade surrounding structures, eating away at them. And they can also spread to other parts of the body, where we say that it has metastasized. So it's a condition that we can predict that it is going to happen. And the way that we predict is to find one, as you alluded to earlier, the presence of a human papilloma virus. We can also find what we call pre-malignant cells or pre-cancerous cells by doing a pap smear. So finding those, we are able to pick up that this might happen. Because from the point of the pre-malignant cell to cancer, it can take something like 10 to 15 years. So it can be quite a prolonged time before the cancer actually happens. But it can also be shortened in the event of someone who is living with HIV or is immunocompromised or immunosuppressed for any other reason.
Now you spoke of human puppy Loma virus. Let's talk about the link specifically to cervical cancer. Is it perhaps a virus that people are born with? It's until it gets triggered? Or is it a virus that humans acquire in different ways? How does it enter the body?
HPV, as we call it in short, is a virus that is sexually transmitted. So no, you are not born with it. This is the commonest sexually transmitted infection, in fact. So about 80% of any sexually active adult is going to, at some point in their life, have human papilloma virus. And then under normal circumstances, the body would clear it within a year or two. It is actually quite common in the younger population. You were talking about the spread or the range of women who are affected or afflicted by cervical cancer. So people under the age of 25, so between 15 and 25, that's where we have the highest burden of human papilloma virus. But this same population can clear it quite easily.
Now,
the problem with it.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah.
Yeah, the problem with it is that it directly causes cervical cancer. So 99% of all cervical cancer cases are caused by this virus.
Now, earlier on, we also spoke about smoking one of the dangers of smoking that we also spoke about was, you know, how it can affect the lungs and the heart. But before we started with the show, one of my producers did mention that, well, there's a link to cervical cancer that is caused by smoking. How true is this?
It's 100% true. And not just smoking, but the use of tobacco products in any form. So what tobacco does is, for some reason, it finds its way to the lining of the genital tract, including the cervix. And the effect that it has there is that it reduces the body's immune response to infections such as HPV. So when HPV, when one is exposed to the HPV and it finds that the area has got a lower local immunity, then it's easier for the infection to take place and for the infection to persist. And it is this persistence that then causes the cervical cancer.
Now, speaking of cervical cancer, a doctor, sometimes as young people, whether a man or woman, girl or boy, we often think we are not more prone to certain diseases. Would you say the same applies to cervical cancer? Are we as young people not more prone as compared to perhaps the older generation?
Although the cancer is more predominant in younger people, it actually affects women of all ages. So women in their 60s and 70s can also be afflicted by it. So no one should say that they are not prone to acquiring HPV infection and therefore developing cervical cancer. And that's why then we need to employ measures to try and prevent it.
And speaking of the measures, what are those measures that you'd like to educate the masses to at least follow year in and year out to prevent the development of cervical cancer, especially among young women at an early stage?
Okay, so we can look at prevention in three tiers. There's what we call primary prevention. So primary prevention is where one gets vaccinated. In the ideal situation, one gets vaccinated against HPV before they get sexually active. And that's why there's an existing school's vaccination program where girls of ages 9 to 14 or in grades 5 to 7 are targeted to be vaccinated before they get sexually active, so that in the event that they do become sexually active, they have some protection against the virus and therefore protection against developing cervical cancer. It's not just them. If that period is missed, the 9 to 14 years is missed, 15 to 26 years can also get vaccinated. And now we've got newer vaccines as well, where there isn't really an age limit. On paper, the age limit is about 45, but in reality or practicality, there's no age limit because you may not necessarily be exposed to a particular subtype of HPV and can still get some form of protection. The second tier would be screening. And the screening occurs primarily by the testing of the virus. So you're testing HPV within the genital tract in the form of a swab. It is sent to a laboratory. The laboratory checks if there is any high-risk HPV subtype. And then if there's any HPV subtype that is high-risk and identified, then there are measures you can take in order to reduce the risk. The other thing that we used to do previously, and we shifted to primary HPV testing, is we used to do pap smears. They are still effective and useful in screening for cervical cancer. So pap smear can also be done. But as of 2023, this country, we moved from doing pap smears to doing primary HPV testing. And then the third tier would be when you identify abnormal cells on the cervix using the pap smear, or you identify high-risk HPV using the HPV testing, then the woman can be referred to a clinician who's able to do a test that's called a colposcopy, where you pass a speculum into the vagina in order to be able to see the cervix. You apply some stains, and then you see the abnormal cells, and then you apply local anesthetic and cut out the abnormal cells, thereby treating the premalignant lesion. So that would be the third thing. And of course, treating the actual cancer itself once it is found.
Now, to wrap up the conversation, Doctor, let's talk about symptoms that you'd like to advise women never to ignore leading to cervical cancer. What are those symptoms, the common symptoms that you'd like to advise women not to ignore that are associated to cervical cancer development?
Okay, so the commonest one would be what we call abnormal uterine bleeding. So once a woman has started experiencing menstrual cycle, there's a pattern that develops, and it's easily predictable when one will be experiencing their menstruation. There may be a deviation from that in the form of perhaps an increase in the flow of the blood, or there's a loss of cyclicity. It becomes irregular and unpredictable. The other thing is that there may be bleeding after sexual intercourse, what we call post-coital bleeding. And then there may be an abnormal discharge as well. There may be some associated pain in the pelvis, low abdominal pain, or even lower back pain. So any of those in isolation or even in combination should raise flags, and one should see a healthcare practitioner as soon as possible.
All right. Amazing, amazing. Doctor, thank you once again for joining us right here on Voice of Vets 88.1. For those who'd like to get in touch with you, how can they do that, Doctor?
How can people get hold of me? I practice at Chrisani Baragwanath Academic Hospital. I also respond to my email. It's a vets email address. So it's kwena.homu@vets.ac.za. So if you want a written form, that is how I can be contacted. I do respond to email.
Amazing. Thank you so much once again, and have a splendid evening.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
All right, that was Dr. Kwena Homu joining us to talk to us about cervical cancer.
FM Rewind, File 88.1.